Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to another episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Deez, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd. Ali?
I am Oli, your classic nerd.
And I'm VM, your comic book nerd.
Guys, white people doing crazy shit again.
Yep.
White people...
Attack of the Clones.
Is this... I got a question before we go on.
I got a question.
Have we transitioned from a nerdy podcast into a what the fuck is going on with the white world podcast? Is that like our main...
I don't think we've ever transitioned. I think that was...
Was that always our thing? I don't remember because our first episode was about Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, there's a lot of white people have been a common feature in our podcast.
Yeah.
Since its inception.
We've been called anti-white for 5 years now.
Is this our niche?
That's our niche.
This is the niche that we've established for ourselves.
It is.
When you're a person of color, you're naturally going to be talking about the crazy shit that white people do.
Yeah. Hey, is V considered a person of color?
Yes, he is.
He's like a model minority.
He's a model minority, yeah.
But that still makes him a person of color.
He's a banana, is what people...
Yes.
Is the racial reference that they make.
Yes.
Or a Twinkie.
I am a banana or a Twinkie.
Twinkie.
I prefer Twinkie for V than banana.
You're more of a Twinkie than a banana.
Does it make sense? I'm not curved like a banana is.
Yeah, you're spongy.
Spongy.
Cream filled.
Yep. Yeah. You look yellow, but you're white.
You got jaundice.
Yeah. You're white. That's true. I've also been manufactured by the corporate overloads or hostess.
Yeah. That's true.
Exactly. Right. And not like substance white in the way that bananas are.
Yeah.
Mm. It's like lack of substance.
That's true. Like bananas have potassium and riboflavins or whatever.
You've been injected with the worst of whiteness.
In his defense, you'll never expire.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. You'll survive
the nuclear holocaust.
The curse of immortality, so I got to watch everyone around me die.
Pretty much, man.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be like your...
See, here's the problem. It's like it's obviously unhealthy. A curse, because I live in constant misery. Mm-hmm. So to never feel the sweet release of death, I think is
Twinkies do expire. They just don't expire like anytime soon.
I mean, they expire in the sense that, you know, you can't consume them after a while. But I don't think they actually degrade.
No, they don't degrade. I've seen people eat shit from like the 1980s, like the little cake thingies.
The Hostesses?
Ho-hos.
Or ding-dongs.
Ding-dongs, those things also last forever.
They're all made from the same company.
Yeah, all made from Hostess.
So apparently Hostess has found the fountain of youth and isn't sharing with the rest of
us. It's true. I actually sleep in this giant plastic tube like what they have in a Twinkie, because I believe it gives me sex powers.
You've
never used.
There's real science behind not Twinkies, but lobsters, because lobsters are the only creature that don't degrade with age. Right? As a lobster gets older, they don't get weaker. Like humans are they living up until about 16. And then from then on, it's degradation. It's actually 22 or so, right? It's like you're actually growing up until that point. After that, it's just downhill. Your body is decaying in one way, shape, or form.
And they haven't actually, they don't pinpoint why the body begins to degrade.
It just does.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas lobsters don't, right? And this is the same with most mammals. Most mammals have a period at one point which they start to degrade, right?
Decay.
Dogs, cats, etc. But lobsters are one of the few animals that age but don't degrade. Even turtles degrade over time, right? Yeah. But lobsters do not. So they're technically trying to find out what it is about lobsters.
So like a lobster could lift like 150
enzymes or chemicals or whatnot and try to fabricate it and see if we can inject it. And then would you do it if you could get like an extra 10 years on your life or 20 years? Would you get like some type of lobster injection?
Did I get an extra 20 years of my life? Yeah, probably. Cause
would you wait until you were 50? Or would you wait later in life and then get the injection?
No. You do it earlier, so that way you stay younger for longer.
For a longer period?
Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
Would you do the lobster injection? They are trying to come up with this.
Yeah.
The two paths to immortality is either lobsters or AI, right? It's like downloading our consciousness into robots.
I've seen that shit in Black Mirror where they fucking take your memory.
Well, there's that one lady, right? She said her downloaded her partner into the robot.
What? That was also in that.
It's basically just programmed with all of our experiences, and it's not an actual download of that person.
No, but like in the other one, remember, where like they make someone into like, they get a piece of your brain and make you into like a slave? The White Christmas episode?
You're talking about Black Mirror. I'm talking about real life.
Oh, I'm talking about
Black Mirror. In real life...
Those are two completely different roots
right here. You're talking about Black Mirror.
That also happened in Black Mirror.
In real life, there was a woman who has a her partner died, and so she downloaded her partner into the robot. Now, she didn't technically download. What she did is she just uploaded all the kind of...
That's from Black Mirror.
Programming that programs
well, Black Mirror. Partner. Black Mirror mirrors things that are happening in life. Like, the idea is it draws inspiration. Yeah, it draws inspiration directly from...
Our generation's Twilight Zone is all it is.
There is a Twilight Zone episode that's very similar to that, where it's about... a girl who basically lives with her uncle. Her uncle's this like mad scientist, and she basically hangs around and deals with his abuse because she wants the inheritance once he dies. Right. His one.
Is that why you're around?
Yeah.
Me?
Yeah. So I stick around for the inheritance.
Yeah, if your inheritance, I'll take that 5.5 million. I've written
my will.
Why? Can I make a ball joke and piss you off?
I've seen his will. He's keeping you on there, but he's only giving you stuff that you're not going to want.
Yeah, books.
I'll sell them.
For your education.
Sell them all.
I'll burn them. There are books written by me.
I'll burn them at your gravesite.
Arrogant to the end.
Read these.
It's all like enrich your life.
Can I get in trouble for that? Like if like you left me a bunch of books in your will and I got pissed off. And
you'll
like,
never see the dead rise faster.
Because you're great. Pour a bunch of gasoline on the books and light that shit.
Like, again, fuck you. My grave is going to be guarded by bodyguards.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're rich. You can do that shit.
That's true.
Shoot on sight.
That's that Council of Shamshir he's been talking
exactly.
about.
Exactly. He's a
shoot on sight.
Council of Shamshir will be there.
He's going to Shamshir on sight.
One of his ex-wives don't fucking dig up his body or some shit.
My ex-wives would be all in love with me. Get the fuck out of here. Want to dig up my body so they keep me in bed.
And so the Twilight Zone episode was... he eventually dies, right? But his one stipulation in the will is that she has to take care of this robot. That he's created. Yeah. The robot basically does his same routine. Mm. What happens is, though, the robot has, in the beginning, has a robot voice. Mm. But as he evolves and he learns, he develops the uncle's voice. Mm. And the robot being immortal, you know, basically makes it so she is stuck with having to deal with her uncle until she dies in order for her to live in this comfortable house. Mm. But it's an interesting look into, like, moving consciousness. It's a very common thing in video games too. Mm. We saw it in Fallout New Vegas with Mr. House, the guy who owns New Vegas, right? He's technically he's in this like a hyperbolic chamber type thing, but he controls all of the casinos of Vegas through his own empty casino. But he has all the money and everything. The
movie Being John Malkovich is all about this, right?
Yeah.
And then their more recent movie with what's his face? What's his name?
Something
Ben
like
Ben Kingsley, who dies and he puts his consciousness into the body of a younger
Get Out.
It's not Get Out.
Oh.
So, but Get Out's based on that. Get Out's based on that. But this is an actual like Ben Kingsley takes over the body of someone. They do this kind of body shifting
consciousness. Oh, is it James the guy from Cyclops?
Yeah, I think it's Marsden. Maybe not.
James Marsden?
Maybe not, but we'll look it up. Ben Kingsley, body consciousness shifting.
We'll figure it out.
The reason we're talking about this random tangent of sci-fi shit is because Barbara Streisand.
Yeah. Barbara Streisand.
Cloned her dogs.
This bitch.
And it was the trending thing on Twitter. First of all.
You know, it's really funny because when you texted me that Barbara Streisand cloned her dogs.
Like, is that a thing?
Yeah. No, I thought that you said it. Because you're going to do it to Diz. You're going to be like, I'm going to... Barbara Streisand clone dogs. You know, it gives me an idea. I'm going to clone Diz. Maybe the next one will be more successful.
I refuse.
Screw you, motherfucker. You're one to talk.
I refuse to clone.
That's why he's not cloning me, because I have no potential.
If I had the capacity to clone, I sure as I wouldn't clone you too. Talk about low-hanging fruit.
It would just annoy the fuck out of you even more.
Yeah, why on earth would I do that?
Just keep us around.
I barely like the originals. I'm pretty sure I can't stand the copies. But yeah, she cloned her dogs. Her dogs died, right? And so now she has them.
Yeah, the dog died in 2007, and she was able to like extract the DNA.
How?
She was able to use the DNA.
From what?
From the dogs.
But like she went and like took the from the dead dogs?
Yeah, from whatever when they were dying or whatnot, she got their DNA.
Oh, and she just like kept her DNA for
some people do cryogenic freezing for shit like this
what
too.
What the hell,
right?
Man?
The thing I have is like, okay. Is it technically, I mean, it's a clone, right? But also, it's not her dog.
Yeah. Right. It's thing. It's like it doesn't have. It doesn't maintain its personality or anything. Like it's a completely.
It has the same genetic makeup, but so it's got different experience. They look identical, but the reality is, it's like the argument of nature versus nurture, right? And we realize now, much of the argument is swayed towards nurture. That even at the genetic level, right? That the genetic makeup will literally rework itself.
Uh-huh.
Based off of its experience, even at the epigenetic level, right? So that what you're experiencing will actually shape your genetics.
It's interesting, yeah.
Whereas in the past, we used to think of humans as made up of code.
Uh-huh.
And that code was hardwired, right? The genes were your code, you were hardwired, and that's it. But now we see it's a much more complex process than that. So in that instance, you're not... A clone isn't a replica of you. It's just your twin.
Yeah. And it had, but the experience and everything else is coming.
It's not the same person.
It's interesting. We actually had a teacher in our high school who adopted a daughter.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to her about it. She thought it was the weirdest thing. She's like, she's adopted, but for whatever reason, she's growing up to look a lot like me.
Mm.
Like her features ended up kind of almost mirroring her adopted mom's, which I found
very fascinating. She was a changeling, is what you
like. Yeah, she was a changeling. Yeah, a little goblin came and stole the baby.
But this also is like, first of all, we are living in the darkest timeline.
We are living.
Trump is president. AI is a thing.
Barbara Streisand is
cloning dogs. Yeah.
This is my technological sci-fi dystopia because both things are happening at once. Skynet is a few years away.
It's true.
And Attack of the Clones are a few years away.
Also true.
You see what I'm saying? We are in the darkest timeline.
Yeah, somewhere in Australia, someone just had a kid and be like, you know, I'm going to name him Django.
This is the end. Huh. This is the end as we fucking know it. Well, first, what fascinates me about this too is like, this is something, is rich white people shit.
That's true.
Right? I mean, only... If you ask someone, who cloned their dog? Barbara Streisand. Of course Barbara Streisand cloned her dog, right? It's like, it's the given thing
fucking
to do.
Fucking Babs.
But Diz Waziri doesn't clone dogs.
No, man. I can't clone anything. I can't. Right?
You don't have the money for it.
Yeah. I can't even...
In which case, you have these technological advancements that are only accessible
to the rich.
Based off of class.
So can you could afford to clone yourself.
This is basically the Twilight Zone, right? There's that Twilight Zone episode in which society is like they make themselves perfect. They make themselves beautiful. They choose their nose, their eyes from catalogs, right?
Mm. I remember
that.
One
of the girls doesn't want to do it, right?
Yeah.
But it's a classist based society, right? And we already talked about kind of gene therapy in which really wealthy parents, right, want their kids to have a certain eye color or hair color or the capacity, you know, I want them to be 6'2 or whatnot. In other words, ordering kids from a menu because they're able to rework at the genetic level.
That's playing God, dude.
It's more than just playing God, though. It's like, the kind of ethical considerations, right, or the religious considerations to aside, mm-hmm. right, it's... Think of the kind of social effect that has on you.
Yeah, because if anyone who's like 6'4 above, it's like, all right, those motherfuckers' parents were rich.
Right.
They got money.
Right. Class becomes even more distinct mm-hmm. and discreet than it was before. Whereas class before is like, oh, who had the bigger house or whatever. But even then, that's not always an arbiter
of
who is. I mean, you could be totally in debt in that house, right?
Yeah, it's true, yeah.
But now...
Yeah, on like a genetic level.
It's not at a genetic level, you got a fucking master race walking around.
Yeah, so now it's not discrete. It's just out in the open.
No, discrete means a different thing than what you're thinking. There's two definitions of discrete.
Yeah, I got confused.
Discrete can mean subtle. Discrete can also mean distinct.
Oh, okay.
Like a cohesive discrete. Yeah.
I thought you meant subtle. I was like, that's the opposite of subtle.
So, yeah, you have a completely, entirely group of master based entirely on money. Right?
And that
Hitler
episode
was right. It was just not the Aryans.
That episode specifically also, what it did was when you went through the operation, your attitude changed. Like your personality would change too. So like everyone, all the beautiful people who had undergone the change also became like a really pleasant, sunny dispositioned person. Whereas the girl who didn't want to change was kind of homely, was much more kind of deep in thought.
This is the type of shit the science, I mean, we're talking about Nazi science come back. But now in the guise of not eradicating people, but literally producing perfection. Would you change something about yourself if you could, like genetically? Not we're not talking plastic surgery, right? Like, oh, I'm going to get a nose job. I'm talking about like something like if you could change something about yourself genetically. Like make myself taller. Would you have blonde hair? Would you have different eye color?
I wouldn't change any of that. I would make myself taller.
Would you sweat less?
Oh, I have had to. That's a tough
genetic.
One.
Just call them out,
right?
Wait, do I only get one choice?
You only get one. What would you change about yourself?
I'd make myself taller.
You'd make yourself taller. You'd deal with the sweat, but you'd
yeah, the sweat taller. You could deal with. I'd be taller. Just
put deodorant on at night before you go to bed.
I'd do that anyway. Yeah. But like, yeah, I'd make myself 6'3".
6'3".
Yeah, I wouldn't be like super tall. 6'3".
But even 6'3" is really tall.
Yeah, that's pretty, I mean, it's more than average.
Yeah, I mean, you.
That's not bad. But then it's not.
You're
so
jumping up over 12 inches.
Fuck you! Not getting a foot taller.
It's also not so. It's not so tall that ends up being like uncomfortable on planes and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. When your knees start hurting.
Yeah, I wouldn't make myself like 6'8", 6'9". That's just insanely tall.
Well, apparently, I have friends that are like heading towards 7 feet tall, and I guess there's the tall that. People problems where it's all like everyone comes up to him and like looks at him and goes, so you play basketball or whatever other bullshit, like apparently that happens a lot.
God, I'd hate to be asked, oh, so you play basketball? And fucking shut the fuck up, motherfucker. I can barely reach the top fucking shelf. You're complaining. People ask me if I play basketball. Fuck you.
But imagine being
tall people are more vulnerable to nut punches and kneecaps.
But they ask,
have a low center of gravity.
It's true. I mean, Diz does play basketball, but it's that little play school one. Little kids
went
with
for the jugular,
ball.
Bro.
Yeah.
What would you change genetically?
What would I change about myself genetically?
Penis bigger.
I would remove the pigment from my skin.
Make yourself white?
I would make myself white.
Would you be white if you could genetically change yourself? Would you be, not like change, like literally take the pigment, but would you be white, like Caucasian, if you could genetically change yourself? Ooh.
No, I wouldn't. Honestly, all joking aside, I actually growing up, I had a lot of problems with racial identity for myself. Yeah. And I think I got into the point
You can still be Vietnamese, and because you're only changing your genetics, you're not changing your upbringing.
The problem is,
You're still eating pho.
Well.
But you now look like you're white.
See, now, I don't think so.
You look like a Brandon, not a V.
I really can't do that because, number one, okay, people look at me as an authority on bun me sandwiches, and with a white face, I cannot represent properly the Vietnamese sandwich.
Pretty sure Bobby Flay is like, the expert.
I would lose my 3 followers on my sandwich layer
if I was an Asian. Actually sure that if you were white, you probably would be a bigger Asian food blogger.
Yeah. You know, it's sad, but it's true.
That's what I'm saying.
It is really true because I could take an Instagram picture of me wearing a straw hat.
Yeah.
I'll be doing a fucking downward dog pose.
This
in
is
front
the official
of
way of actually eating pho, and you looked white, you would fucking have.
I know. I'd have a job
followers.
With like Bon Appetit or one of these other stupid fucking
million
things.
Different
or I could literally put hot Cheetos inside of anything, and all of a sudden they'll think I'm a fucking genius when it comes to food.
We're not going
to
ask you.
Because the answer is very evident.
Yeah, I'm just not going to ask you. Let's skip this subject.
I am one of those rare people that do not suffer from, and it's not arrogance. It's not like I think I'm the greatest of all time, which I do think of that. Uh-huh. But it's just pure. I'm very comfortable with myself.
I'm comfortable with myself too.
I wouldn't change. Like if they offered me, like, would you have hair? Like, if people often ask me that when we do these shows, like, oh, would you genetically change? I'm like, absolutely not.
I don't want to like you with hair.
Yeah, I don't think I would be.
That's true. Diz and you, the first 18 years of his life.
I don't think I would be who I am today if I had hair.
I don't like you. I think
my baldness is part of who I am.
I
enjoy it.
Just fine. But like,
with hair? Nah.
Anything else?
I'd be a hippie if I had hair.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Exactly. What if my personality was radically different?
Oh, you'd have a ponytail.
It's about love and
my god,
peace and
be horrible.
Fucking Hair Ali is the worst.
God, I hate Hair Ali. He's such a pizza. He drives a Volkswagen bus. What do you call those things?
The bus.
The little small buses. Go Volkswagen buses. They're called something else. They're not Beatles. They're called something else.
Not a bug.
Remember the hippie mobiles?
Yeah, right? I know you're talking about.
You know those bus. Hippie, you know random. You know what the random place for all those hippie buses are?
Germany,
Afghanistan.
Oh yeah,
Afghanistan was part of the hippie trail back in the 1900s, right? Like 1960s and 70s.
Uh-huh.
Everyone went on to Afghanistan because Afghanistan had the Great Kush, but also was the trail you went to the Himalaya Mountains.
Oh yeah,
right. So there is, and then. for whatever reason, they left all the Volkswagen buses there, and Afghans learned to repair it. And so there was like a weird, in the 70s,
this. I can fit my whole family in this car.
Weird like explosion of Volkswagen buses in Afghanistan.
I like those buses.
Back in, this is a weird, the history of hippies in Afghanistan. Maybe I'll write a book about that someday. Hippie trail.
I worked with a guy who lived in a Volkswagen bus.
Did he?
Who would serve, was when I worked at Macaroni Grill. Yeah. We would serve, he would serve there. And then he would literally, the bus was parked in the parking lot, you know, and he would just crash in the parking lot.
I had a friend who had a bright orange one. But you know what fascinates me about those Volkswagen buses? Is that they seem like they'll never die, and yet they always seem like they're on their last leg.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're like on their last leg for the next 50 years. It's like, dick, 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 barely can get up a hill.
And it sounds like there's a gunshot going off.
But for whatever reason, it continues to survive for the next 50 years.
They're the stubborn old guy.
It's the German engineer. Yeah. Like, this car was going to fall apart.
Seriously.
But it's going to fall apart in the next... It's going to be reliable for at least... Reliably unreliable for the next 50 years.
Volkswagen got a lot of grief lately.
For what?
They were faking tests on their emissions.
Really?
Yeah, they had a system in place where they had, like, dummy tests going on. They got sued. They lost a... They had to fucking pay billions in fines, man. Like, the Obama administration fined the fuck out of them. Because they were selling clean diesel cars. And it turns out that... The way that they were testing the cars tricked the tests because they had their own
corporations.
Yeah,
Fucking corporate. I mean, if there's a way to just screw you over,
that's true.
They're gonna all these environmentalists were buying these clean diesel cars. It's so good. The emissions that they put out is great. It's gonna make smog go away.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was it was worse than the regular cars, right? Because it's diesel, and then on top of that, they just kept instead of trying to fix the cars, they just made ways of cheating better.
In the system. Yeah. Of course.
At least they didn't leave to South America where they got caught.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Twinkies and white people amongst the Asians and white experts amongst the Asians.
Yes.
Tom Cruise?
No. So I've made it a point. This whole part of me growing up in Orange County, I'm a double operative to learn about the white population.
Yeah. White people.
Yeah. Learning about stuff.
I mean, we are doing an ethnography of people like Barbara Streisand fucking cloning her dogs.
I swear.
And now apparently, what's his face?
That is true. Yeah. Jared Leto. So this is, I find that let me set this up real quick. This past couple of weeks, I've been noticing a lot of kind of weird Asian American grief going on. A lot of it is kind of stemmed from, you know, watching something like Black Panther has made a lot of ethnic communities kind of look at Hollywood in a different light now, right? So it's opened up a lot of interesting doors. I was reading this guy named Joshua Luna, who's a really great comic book artist who talks a lot about
he did illustration where like Asian that little Asian guy was translating with the white
people. That was the comic that I sent you guys. He was talking about Black Panther and about how Asian people are represented in white media, right? And then they brought up an interesting idea, or someone who followed and talked about how Afrofuturism is a real thing, whereas Asian futurism, quote unquote, doesn't exist the same way, because what white people have done is they've pretty much co-opted what Asian futurism is and made it their own future without the Asian people in it. Mm-hmm. And if you look at a lot of futuristic conceptions, right, a lot of it is very hard. Like a lot of it is very Asian, but you don't really see Asian people in.
Or Asian inspired, but it's not. For example, Big Hero 6 is an example.
Exactly right.
Right. What is it, Tokyo, for instance, Tokyo or San Fran, Tokyo, or whatever it is. Right.
Or any of those. Like you look at even like, I mean, Ghost in a Shell,
Blade Runner.
Yeah, like all that stuff. All those futuristic conceptions end up kind of being taken from
Atlas.
Yeah, exactly. From these like big Japanese style Asianic type of futuristic
cities. Pan-Asianic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a big problem with that. And right now, of all the times for them to decide to release a trailer was just now, or about a week ago. And it's set for a March 7th release. It's Jared Leto in what's called The Outsider, which is the Netflix movie. It's essentially about like an American guy played by Leto who is stuck in like a prison, and he ends up getting help from a Yakuza gang member and escaping.
So it's Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai.
Kind of, yeah.
But with Jared Leto and
They said that. They literally called The Last Yakuza with Jared Leto. It's like a big joke.
Christ.
But essentially what happens in the movie is that because he got help, now he has to be he has to repay the Yakuza.
So he's in debt to the Yakuza?
Yeah, so he has to basically do jobs for him.
You don't fuck with the Yakuza, man.
This is the funny thing about that, right? So, like, the Yakuza, you know, the poison arm of the Pacific, right? Mm. They themselves, in their own way, consider themselves outsiders in Japanese culture, right? So, like, we already have an interesting idea with that movie in the sense that the guy who wrote it, who I think is actually, like, Norwegian or something.
Of course.
By Andrew Baldwin, actually. Written by Andrew Baldwin.
Yeah. Foremost expert in all things Yakuza.
So, you know, they write about it, and the concept of calling him an outsider with an organization who already considers themselves fringe is a really weird concept as in and of itself.
It's meta, bro. He's an outsider to the outsiders.
Yeah, and then the Yakuza
which itself... Which make him an insider.
It's odd, right?
That's why it's meta.
Yeah. Well, look at it. But then they technically, because he's working for him, he is an insider because... Yeah. Because he's working.
But he's a gaiji.
Yeah, this thing, it's like, they talk about how, the society would never let gaijin in. Mm. This, you know, Yakuza is an interesting criminal organization because it literally permeates Japanese culture in its own way, right? This is a really weird idea behind the Japanese underground where, like, during the Fukushima thing or during massive amounts of natural disasters, the Yakuza are there just as much as government officials helping out people.
Yakuza is also deeply entwined with a lot of big corporations.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, a lot of, like, we talked to in MMA, Pride was considered connected with
Yakuza,
right? And a lot of it had to do with the fact that that made them kind of untouchable when they're trying to sell the organization. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. And so there's a backlash between that because they're going, this is literally the same thing. Netflix literally released Marvel Presents Yellow Fever, a.k.a. Iron Fist, where the white guy comes in, goes to the exotic land, learns all their secrets, right? Saves everyone, you know, fucks the Asian women while he also somehow beats up all the non important Asian men.
Yeah, all the bad guys are Asian.
Yeah.
They even have, one of the bad guys is an old Asian lady with magical powers.
Yeah, she's part of the Hand, but she was in Daredevil and stuff too.
You know, this is stuff that you just like, you go, oh no.
Yeah. It's horrible,
they actually went there.
It's like the only movie that I can justify enjoying that has that is Big Trouble in Little China because it has to do with the lightning fists, right? And he literally has the worst aim in the world. Mm. He literally shoots diagonally.
So that one of my things about that movie that I love is that they have some of the most powerful characters that are entirely impotent. You have the one guy with the lightning who seems to relish in destroying everything but his target. So in his desire to show off, he's like, kill this kid over here. He's just like, put a puppy dead over there.
Yeah,
like,
blows up a lamppost, right?
It's the guy you don't want to send out because he's ruining your interior design. He said, go get that guy. No, that's the couch. Why'd you hit the couch? Right? The couch isn't even remotely closed because he's doing all those kung fu moves. And then you have the other guy who, is, I guess he's associated with air or whatnot, who blew himself up. He just sucked in all that air. And then he explodes. It's like, okay, wait a minute. You offed yourself.
Yeah.
What type of boss decides that his final finishing move is not he's going to kick everyone's ass, but he's just going to die impotently without
causing any damage? Was actually the inspiration for The Last Airbender.
Big Trouble in Little China is one of my favorite movies.
It is
based off the fact that it is on another level of ridiculous.
But you look at any of those movies and the depictions, like literally, but that idea is literally seen in almost every single depiction of an Asian martial artist. They sit there and they kick the air and then they punch around and they scream and everything, right? Without ever actually doing anything. Mm-hmm. But that's it's a weird impotence of Asian culture. Another thing that annoyed me after reading about this is I actually heard on a WWE house show, there's a Japanese wrestler named Kairi Sane.
Oh, yeah.
Who is very talented. Up. She's got the best flying elbow since Macho Man Randy Savage.
It's true. She's got an amazing flying elbow.
She was at a house show.
Is this a euphemism for sex?
No.
No, she does. Because you know how the Macho Man, his special move is to go to the top rope and drop the elbow. Yeah. No.
I did this. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mm. Well, Kairi Sane does the same thing. Except when most people do it, they don't land it properly. They land on the ground first. It doesn't look like it hit properly. Yeah. She actually does it where it looks like legit.
It lands.
It's a pretty great move. Yeah. They were talking about how she was at a house show. People were tweeting about there was a small section of the crowd that was chanting happy ending at her when she was wrestling.
Wow.
And then they chanted Pearl Harbor at her after that.
But the wrestling crowd in general, I mean, that's Trump's base.
It's yeah,
the ugliest of the ugly in America.
I think it was in Arizona, too.
Yeah, it's the ugliest of the ugly in America.
It really is. I went to a house show for my birthday.
And I mean that by literally. They're not just ugly politically and emotionally, but they are the ugliest people I've ever seen are wrestling fans.
You know, I'm
fuck
not,
yourself.
I'm not going.
I looked you right in the eye as I said that.
Yeah, so I'm not going to make any. I'm not going to make any like sweeping statements about the fan base. But I will say, when I did go to that house show in Portland, it looked like I was shopping at a Walmart.
Yeah. Well, it's because you were at the fucking top, bro.
Told you.
You're in the nosebleeds.
There's a special crowd.
I was literally walking around the merchandise booth.
There's a special crowd that watches.
I've seen some sexy people.
That watches wrestling.
I saw Macaulay Culkin.
Ooh. He died, right?
No, he's still alive.
He's still alive. He looks like he's dead.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but I saw him. I saw him, Seth Green, and Brenda Song. All three of them were together.
I'm telling you, they're all ugly as hell.
Brenda Song is not ugly.
I don't know who Brenda Song is,
but she's gorgeous.
Wasn't she on the Disney Channel?
All wrestling fans.
She was one of the Asian girls from the Social Network.
I don't know what that means.
Social Network.
Mm, I never watched that movie.
You're a stupid idiot.
No, I did watch that movie.
Yeah, you did watch that movie. I didn't watch that movie.
I understand a lot of these frustrations. I think Black Panther, for a lot of people, which, by the way, there's a funny aside, Tesco, which is kind of the Walmart, if you will, of...
The UK?
The UK, mm-hmm. released a costume of Dark Panther.
What?
People were like, wait, what the fuck? Either this is a bootleg? Yeah. Well, it's copyright issues, or you done goof big time. But anyways, Black Panther really raised a lot of questions about representation, but more importantly, they really recentered politics in the comic book world.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of times, in my humble opinion, right, is you had almost no real politics in comic book movies, whereas in comic books themselves,
uh-huh.
politics is always underlying. Either it's very overt, in the case of, for example, X-Men, right, uh-huh. where you see the politics right up center. Even Avengers, the politics is right in center. Or there's a subtext of politics in that the politics of the author or the society is reflected in comic books.
Uh-huh.
But the movies haven't done that. In fact, the movies, both DC and Marvel, have shied away openly from politics. Even the Avengers movies, while politics exists, they don't make any overt political statements.
No.
Yeah.
Wakanda and Black Panther become the first to actually really do so. It's the first... Now, it's not perfect, right? There are deep uh-huh. flaws in Black Panther, but in the politics of Black Panther, the movie's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
But it's the first that overtly takes on nationalism versus internationalism. And so it reintroduces politics in comic book movies, even though politics has always been part of comic books themselves.
That is true. I mean, you have to realize that I think people forget with comic books that it's a writing medium.
Uh-huh.
So the authors will naturally they will express what their beliefs are about life and their philosophies through their writing. Just because there happens to be pictures connected to it doesn't mean that it's not a medium for writing, right? Yeah. And comic books have always kind of been, in my opinion, kind of in the forefront of a lot of social issues or a lot of social justice ideas, right? We saw this, we see this with Marvel Comics in the early times, right? We see this with, like you said, X-Men or with, you know, things like, like Black Panther when he came out, you know, in the, the 60s or with a lot of like the comics that would help the civil rights movement. Mm-hmm. Right, that what March was kind of based on. One thing that you also have to realize too is that it will express ideas that you may not necessarily consider to be political, but they mm-hmm. are. One of my favorites right now is by Image Comics by Brian K. Vaughan, who is doing, I think he's doing the Runaways or one of these shows right mm-hmm. now. But he did Saga, or he's doing Saga right mm-hmm. now with Fiona Staples. And what's great about this one is that it not only does it make it a point to represent, characters of different colors and sizes and personalities. It also creates this idea of what unintended consequences of politics creates, mm-hmm. the unintended consequences. Perfect example, for those of you who haven't read Saga, which is probably the most popular indie comic out there outside of The Walking Dead right now. It's essentially kind of a love story between this Marco and Alana. Now, Marco is part of Wreath, which is, mm-hmm. but they have horns on their head, and they live in kind of this satellite planet outside of Alana's planet, which is part of the planet called Landfall. Landfall is technologically advanced. Wreath is magic using based. Yeah. The people of Landfall have wings, mm-hmm. right? So essentially, they were at war with each other. They hate one another. But the realization is, if you destroy either one of the planets, it destroys everything because the gravitational pull or something, or like the atmosphere gets destroyed if either side actually wins.
Okay.
So what they did was they ended up outsourcing the war across the galaxy.
Okay.
So all these other planets were forced to choose a side, and the planet, like the actual Landfall and Wreath themselves, aren't actually fighting this war anymore. But the rest of the galaxy is forced to choose a side, and they're fighting the war for them.
Interesting.
So this is this weird thing where somehow there was populations that had absolutely nothing to do with the conflict,
uh-huh.
but they are forced into this conflict and saga.
It's like World War II and World War One.
Yeah, or I mean, even, you know, I mean, you had that talk at UC Riverside, Elite,
yeah.
talking about
which
kind
was
of
brilliant, if I yeah. may say so myself.
Talking about how things, when big powers move,
yeah,
ultimately the ones that end up suffering the most,
yeah.
are not the ones that are talked about in history books, uh-huh. but the ones who end up being kind of the staging area yeah. for these things.
The unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Unintended consequences.
Right? And it's like, it's almost, and then like Timothy McVeigh, people use the term collateral damage, right? For things that happen as this weird euphemism for all the people who had no interest in being involved in anything mm-hmm. and yet kind of suffered the most out of it. And, you know, Saga isn't, the central point of Saga isn't that, but mm-hmm. I think it's important because throughout the journey of Alana and Marco and their daughter,
yeah.
they run into people and groups who they themselves
yeah.
are the recipients of that unintended consequence.
What's interesting about comic books and any type of really creative attempts at understanding politics is they become a very good lens for understanding real world politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
On one end, you can, as a sort of cultural historian, if you will, use comic books to understand the politics of both the person who is writing them, as well as the politics of their time. Comic books do not exist in a vacuum. They exist within a context, a socio-historical context, right?
Mm-hmm.
Superman can be understood within the context of its time.
Right.
Batman can be understood within the context of its time as a reflection of those times. But simultaneously, comic books also not only tell us the reflection of what's going on, but are constructed in their own unique ways. They have their own kind of cohesive internal logic to their politics. And I think Wakanda is a big feature of that in the broader Marvel universe.
Yeah, like in the movie. So it was, when I first watched it, like I was kind of confused, right? Because a lot of what they were saying sounded very like alt-right. Almost, right? Like Wakanda first, and
yeah.
you know, like we can't have refugees come in. So it was very like nationalistic, right? And then towards the end, so it was all about their national identity, and it became about their racial identity later,
mm-hmm.
when towards the end of the movie,
yeah.
when you see like he's trying to go out,
and starts off as a nationalist and ends up as an internationalist.
Yeah, and it's weird because like for me, I see a lot of that through my lens and like the people that I'm around. Because, you know, I grew up Afghan American.
Mm-hmm.
So what we see is like, we'll see a lot of people post stuff about Afghanistan. And then because we're in the Muslim community, we'll also see people post stuff about like Palestine. And there's a big disconnect though, is like, you'll see like, because I have a lot of Muslim friends that are not just mm-hmm. Afghan, but they're like Arab American. They'll post about Arab things, right? But they'll never post about Afghan things. Although Afghans are always posting about like Arab things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and there's always a disconnect. Like, why don't you guys stand up for our causes as well when we're standing up for yours?
Mm-hmm.
And you were mentioning something about it before we were recording it. It was like, there's three lenses to it.
Yeah, there's three levels of understanding when it uh-huh. comes to politics in the Middle East, right? And in the Muslim world more broadly. And they exist to help us understand the scale.
Uh-huh.
So the largest is pan-Islam, right? Okay. Which is, or pan-Islamic. The idea being that they're solidarity religion-based.
With the ummah.
With this idea of a global ummah. In other yeah. words, that if your solidarity is rooted in your religious identity,
uh-huh.
and because religious identity is such a broad category,
yeah.
you then have this global solidarity. Then there's ethnic solidarity, which is pan-Arabism, right? Mm-hmm. There's sort of kind of pan-Persianness sometimes. Uh-huh. For example, Tajiks, Afghans, and Iranians will sometimes kind of form a coalition, sort of, but not quite in the same way as pan-Arabism, which is, you know, what Nasser was very big on, which even the early Ba'athist movements, right? Saddam Hussein, Hafiz Assad, who was the father of Bashar al-Assad. But they were all very big on this kind of pan-Arabism. So that's ethnic solidarity. And then there's the third category, which is national solidarity. That is your nation and your nation alone. And America right now is part of that. And even in American politics, you see that kind of language, right? You see this notion of Western Christendom, right? The Western world must unite together. That's a sort of civilizational discourse. Then you have the discourse of very white ethno-nationalists, right? White people are facing white genocide, hashtag white genocide, and must rally together. And then you have the nationalistic discourse of America first. Right. What's interesting about Black Panther is that people who don't understand its politics are like, oh, well, he's an alt-right. He's not. Because he's very distinctly chooses not to be that.
Yeah, like when I was looking up, I looked up politics of Wakanda on YouTube, and like the second video was Black Panther is an alt-right film. Black Panther's trying to make Wakanda great again. And I'm like,
oh, jeez.
That's just a bunch of disgruntled white people trying to claim Wakanda for themselves.
Granted, it only had 3,000 views, but still, it was one of the top videos of the search. Yeah,
but there's also guys like Ben Shapiro did a Wakanda politics.
Yeah, he tried to connect it to Israel. And
right, and it's just, it's number one, it's idiotic, because if you ever watch, if you actually watch the movie and pay attention, it's like completely.
Literally, the message is the exact opposite.
It's really,
we must be part of a global community.
So we even talk about how Coogler made it a point to use terms that we understood, right, in that movie. Terms that we connected with things. That's why Diz went alt-right the second the second they said things, right?
Yeah.
Another thing that Killmonger says when he takes over, he goes, the sun will never set on the Wakandan Empire, right? It's a very English, very English colonialist saying.
It's a British saying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The sun never sets on the British Empire.
Yeah, so that was that was for me when Killmonger said that, that was the point for me where I went, oh, okay, where I really see what they're, like the what he's really trying to drive from here. Mm-hmm. Another great a comic that you should read from Vertigo is called Fables. And what's great about Fables is that it takes the universe of Aesop's Fables and it kind of creates a world around it, right? One of the main kind of protagonists or antagonists, excuse me, I always get the two mixed up. Kind of the main antagonist is the emperor, right, who has taken over the lands of fables. It's forcing all the fables to live in New York and is like magical part of the city. You find out that it's actually Geppetto who is the one who is the emperor. And you learn about the way that he began taking things over by using the sacred grove wood and creating a bunch of quote-unquote puppet governors, taking out governors from regions and creating puppet governors to basically rule from his own little seat of power. Eventually, he decides that his rule, his iron-fisted rule, is the only way that you maintain peace. So he conquers all the other fabled lands, right? But that is a very, when I read that, to me, it reminded me a lot of kind of our American need to basically take over through quote-unquote democracy by using our guns and by using our force, when in actuality, all it does is destabilize foreign lands. And, you know, in my opinion, right? Because, yeah, we may technically not have a dictator like Geppetto, but a lot of what he ended up doing is very much within kind of the scope of American politics. He took governors out and he placed his own puppets into it, right? Something that we were very comfortable with doing in our history, right? And then when that didn't work, when it wasn't fast enough, he relied on brute force and destruction, which we absolutely do now more than ever, in my opinion. Like, we really do stuff, yeah.
Paul, the part of the thing is, so what Black Panther as a movie does is reintroduce politics in the MCU, which has been really lacking in the MCU. The MCU has done a good job of kind of character building, but they're mostly been doing kind of origins and building up to this great cataclysmic event, Infinity Wars, right? But there's very little, despite the fact that you have S.H.I.E.L.D., Hydra, you have governments, you have all this stuff, the politics isn't front and center. even in Captain America Civil War, right? It's kind of a placeholder. Oh, we're really just going to use this just to create tension between the two
yeah,
people.
Yeah.
It's not a real interrogation of politics. Whereas comic books are much more keenly aware of that. So I think Black Panther is an intervention in comic book movies to reintroduce politics. And in many ways, Wakanda represents the direction that MCU can start to take, is start to ask these questions of where is Wakanda's world in the and where is Wakanda's place in the global scheme of things? What is America's place? Where are superheroes' place in the global scheme of things, right? In international politics.
I appreciate that.
So, yeah, so yeah. I think that's great. But in the past, when we've seen, that doesn't necessarily mean that all politics done by comic books and comic book movies are good. There's a lot of kind of weird, funky politics.
That is true.
Particularly in two examples, one a movie and one a comic book. And one is Captain America, right?
Which one?
And now I've all of Captain America. Just all of. Now, we could just dismiss this as Ali's natural hate of Captain America. But in reality, Captain America's politics is the funkiest politics.
How so?
In the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Tony Stark is very openly a capitalist. Openly a capitalist that eventually was originally selling weapons and then develops a moral conscience, an ethical conscience. Right? And so he doesn't change being a capitalist, but now he's the capitalist that wants to solve the world's problems.
Okay.
Right? He's the Bill Gates, he's the Elon Musks of the world. So to
I can
speak,
see that. Yeah.
Right? Or what he thinks. They're kind of caricatures of that, right? But Captain America is the most inconsistent. On one hand, he is very openly American propaganda, right? Yeah. By which I mean not openly state propaganda, right? Uh-huh. But the mythos of the American origin.
So he's supposed to like represent American spirit,
rugged
right?
Rugged individualism, choice over, you know, everything else, freedom, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, he's literally a fucking walking flag.
Mm-hmm. Puerto Rican flag.
Right. But where his politics is the most inconsistent is the fact that on one end, he's willing to work with S.H.I.E.L.D., begrudgingly. Mm-hmm. He has tensions with S.H.I.E.L.D., he disagrees with S.H.I.E.L.D. He's willing to be part of a transnational organization that goes out and extrajudicially carries out action. It's a fucking special ops, is what it is.
Yeah.
Right? It is. I mean, and it's extrajudicial. In many ways, replicating drone warfare. Mm-hmm. Right? It's an act of force that is outside legal definitions of warfare.
That's true. Like, he does a lot of...
He just enters into other people's airspace and does what he wants.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
But he does it on behalf of S.H.I.E.L.D. because S.H.I.E.L.D. is the good guy.
But he almost took down S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, he only took down S.H.I.E.L.D. because S.H.I.E.L.D. was infiltrated by Hydra.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. Okay, S.H.I.E.L.D. can only be bad because it's been infiltrated by Hydra. No, motherfucker. You have a massive international intelligence apparatus. That is bad in of itself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? No matter how much you're like, oh, we're defending the world, we're S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah, but you do some funky stuff. Now, they do a good job of showing that S.H.I.E.L.D. plays in the gray area, that they do kind of, they make the tough choices, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then, when he has an opportunity in Civil War to sign the Sokovia Accords that would bring some type of international oversight, what does he do?
He says no.
Oh, no, we refuse to be part of any bureaucracy. I don't want to be part of other people's politics. Motherfucker, you've been acting as an independent international...
He's been a tool of the state.
You've been a tool of S.H.I.E.L.D. for how many... I mean, you literally are born because S.H.I.E.L.D. injected you with shit.
Gammas. Mm,
get him with that with that human growth hormone.
So they fucking hit you with human growth hormone, but now all of a sudden you're like, I'm not going to work for the international body.
Yeah, I know. When did he get a more... When did he get a conscious all of a sudden?
Not just a conscious, but what a hypocritical conscious, right? It's okay for you to work for S.H.I.E.L.D. because they're sort of American, but it's not okay for you to work for the U.N.? And no one's saying that you have to be the employee of the U.N. in the same way that, you know, say Superman becomes the tool of Reagan in Frank Miller's shit, right? Uh-huh. But you are having some oversight, right? So that's one example of really funky politics in movies, right? And another one in the comic books is Frank Miller's shit.
Oh, geez, Frank Miller.
Is always, now, he is credited in many ways with really taking the Batman series to beautiful heights, right?
He's pioneered a lot of
Dark Knight Rises is great stuff, but...
He did Sin City in 300 too?
Yes.
Yeah, and also his always his politics is always funky. And in it, I mean, he literally has a comic book series about jihad and shit. It's really funky, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at Batman v Superman, Dark Knight Rises, etc., right? Where but the movie Batman v Superman draws a little bit from it, right? The whole spear with a kryptonite, the whole bat armor stuff, that all comes out of the comic.
It's like Jesus almost a spear.
But the great stuff about this is that okay, in that comic book, the critique is that Superman becomes the agent of the state. He becomes Ronald Reagan's tool.
Okay.
Right? And specifically, he actually goes out and puts an end to the other superheroes.
Yeah. That's right? Why he like breaks Green Arrow's fingers or like cuts his fingers off.
He cuts his arm off.
Yeah, it makes it so he can't use his bow anymore.
Yeah, so he goes out and deals with, and Bruce Wayne returns at a time when Gotham needs him most. He's older, but Gotham needs him again. It's overrun by these mutants, right? These kind of creatures living out in the swamps and junkyards.
Are they communists?
And they're not communists, but it's the mob, right? And what Batman does is he literally creates a vigilante mob of Batman acolytes.
Yes.
To fight against these people.
Children, by the way.
Most of them children. The Robin in this one is a little girl. Who basically drives a tank for him. And so in the series, it ends with Batman basically kind of defeating Superman and then continuing on his
mission. Yeah, he teaches these vigilante groups to basically ensure that the law is...
Now, Frank Miller very clearly leans towards some form of libertarianism.
Yeah.
Right. He's very critical of state power.
Well, we said that Batman is a libertarian's wet dream.
Yeah, but here's the thing. This Batman is fascistic.
Yeah.
In the same way that you have Superman as a tool of Ronald Reagan, Batman takes it upon himself to be judge, jury, executioner. Right? He's literally creating a wild, wild west. He goes, if the world is going to be, a mob, then it needs the firm iron fist of a dictator. He's like Mao. He's like Stalin, right? But he's set up as this sort of libertarian capitalist who's coming in and saving Gotham.
Yeah,
is where you could see that it's a reflection of Frank Miller's really fucked up politics. Yeah.
And then even like the use of the Joker in that comic is interesting because it basically talks about this like Joker's rehabilitation through the psychologist on TV.
It's false.
Yeah, but the psychologist kind of spouts this whole like Batman was the problem, is the reason why. Yeah. The brute force of Batman broke this man and all this other stuff. And it was very much shitting on the mental sciences or like on psychology and a lot of things, right? Where Frank Miller is very much a bit of an odd duck when it comes to those.
But that also is embedded in the framing of Batman itself, right?
Yeah.
Frank Miller's politics is already funky, but Batman itself has a kind of odd framing. Where do all the bad guys go?
Arkham Asylum.
In other words, the bad guys are what?
They're all mentally ill.
Yeah. He's dealing with people who are, remember, they call them the criminally insane, right?
Yeah.
He's dealing with mental illness. In other words, mental illness, in a very Foucauldian sense of the origins of psychiatry, is used as a metaphor for othering people.
Yeah.
Right? The bad guys aren't ordinary people carrying out crimes. Mm-hmm. They are mentally ill individuals. Where the reality of the statistic is that and we see this with the gun control debate, right? People talk about, it's the mental illness. We need to hit mental illness, but we should point out that Republicans cut funding for mental illness and healthcare. So if you're talking about, mental illness, go fuck yourself. But also that statistically speaking, the people who commit violent acts and gun massacres, of those that are mentally ill, it's an insignificant proportion of like 30%.
Yeah, it's really bad because that in and of itself, we had an episode talking about the depiction of mental illness in comics and in media. Mm-hmm. So we obviously, we've kind of gone over this before. And it's a bit sad really because what it does is it kind of creates a situation where the people who do have real problems, bipolar disorder, whatever, right? All of a sudden, the idea surrounding this, there's nothing wrong with having those things, depression, bipolar disorder, any of that stuff. But when the depiction is all the villains within this universe, the reason why the reason for their villainy is mental illness.
Uh-huh.
People, the stigma that connects to it ends up being bad, and some people don't end up getting the help that they need because of the things that are attached to admitting that you have those.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the comic books are kind of cons of that. That the stigma is already a broader societal problem.
Yeah, of course.
We deal with mental illness in a weird way in this country, as it is. But we're talking about political frameworks, right? And we can see that in comic books themselves, they are reflections of society. So on one hand, we can credit Frank Miller for his weird politics in Dark Knight Rises, right? He is this weird, masturbatory dream of libertarianism. Batman is him. Batman is him standing up, rallying the mob, right? It's the Second Amendment dream of everyone. The good guy with the gun scenario.
It is right? weird, though, because his origins were kind of birthed out of a time where gun violence was very real. Was huge.
I mean, his parents died from gun violence.
His kind of origins kind of came from them being like, guns are bad.
Yeah, but right? Batman is a criminal.
Yeah.
A criminal who's fighting criminals.
Yeah.
Right? So the idea being bad guys with guns can only be met with good guys with guns, right? So there's already the kind of funky politics of Frank Miller, right? But it also we see is that the politics is also just a reflection of society. Where Batman is created by certain character, by certain authors, it's not just a reflection of those authors. It's a reflection of society in of itself. Batman came out during an era in which psychopathy was seen as the primary means by which to deal with the criminal insane. It was at the height of behavioral psychology. Most of the Batman comics, the golden age of Batman comics, coincides with the height of behavioralist psychology.
Like Milgram and stuff?
Which is the idea that, not Milgram. So we're talking about people that say that you can change, that most of the behavior, most of the problems that we face that are criminal, that are violent, are behavioral problems. They are rooted in psychology. They're not social problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you look at something like the Marvel politics in X-Men, we see that the ailments are two-pronged. One, they're sourced from genetics, but that genetics is what creates difference. In other words, it's social alienation that creates the tension. And that's because the height of the X-Men comics is what?
Civil rights.
Post-civil rights era.
Yeah.
Right? So you can see how in both instances, the comic books aren't just authors constructing their politics, working out their weird political fantasies through Batman, through Superman, through Captain America, but more of evidently is also just the reflection of the time period.
I guess that actually makes total sense because naturally people are being affected by what's going on around them.
Yeah.
So it will naturally translate into their own
depictions. We try to make legible the world around us. We write about what we know.
Yeah.
You're not going to write about stuff you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know shit about training horses. I'm not going to write a book about training horses.
Yeah,
or a comic book that's going to involve training horses, right?
Yeah.
But I will write what I do know. And this is the same for any author. Any short story, any novel, they write what they know. Which is why comic books and comic book movies offer very interesting insight into politics.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that we'll see more of it in the MCU. I don't think we'll see it in the DC universe, even though there's a really great way that they can juxtapose Avengers versus Justice League.
Yeah.
They haven't done it yet, but they could if they take it in that direction. Strike team versus government coalition, right?
Yeah.
That's a really fascinating political juxtaposition.
Or, I mean, they dropped the ball with Suicide Squad, but exploring kind of Amanda Waller's role within like being a coercive power over criminal elements, right?
Shit that the government does behind closed doors.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm hopeful for the MCU, but mostly thanks to Black Panther. I also have a sneaking suspicion that Black Panther might be a one-off.
By the way, read V for Vendetta and also read Transmetropolitan.
Those are good. If you actually read V for Vendetta and then watch the movie, and you see that there is a very stark difference between the politics. V for Vendetta as a movie was written post 9/11, and was written in the era of the Iraq War, and so there's a lot of overturns to that. The kind of subtext of that is very much American invasion of the American kind of intelligence apparatus growing during the Iraq War. Whereas when you read V for Vendetta, the comic books, it's much more a critique of Thatcherism and extremism from both ends, because he is not an anti-hero in the comic books. He is much more openly a gray character.
Yeah.
You don't root for him. You don't root for anybody in the comic books. Everybody's gray in the comic
books. Same kind of in like Watchmen too, right? Like kind of the same thing. Read, honestly, Frank Miller, whatever. Yeah. Alan Moore is Alan really Moore the place to go.
Because Alan Moore likes to sit with the gray stuff. The stuff that makes you uncomfortable.
Alan Moore, hands down, probably, in terms of legendary comic book writers, probably one
no
of
No one's ever truly good. No one's ever truly bad.
Yeah, Alan Moore, his pictures, his depictions end up being much more...
Though he's way more violent.
He is, but
and
I think
sexual
he,
violence is
the idea behind that is he's supposed to, he's trying to push kind of the grittiness of it all. He's trying to kind of depict how horrible it can really be. Yeah. And I think that, you know, that translates into his work.
On that recommendation, we are going to end our podcast. Let us know what you think. Is there certain politics that you're drawn to? Is there a comic book or comic book movie whose politics you find fascinating? Are there certain creative ways, artistic representations that help us understand the world around us? Let us know your thoughts. You can hit us up with our hashtag or our various social media platforms. Diz will let you know how.
Yes, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/currentlynerdy. We're on Twitter, @currentlynerdy. On Instagram, currentlynerdy. Tumblr, currentlynerdy.tumblr.com. On YouTube, search currentlynerdy. We're on the iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Make sure you go on there and subscribe if you haven't already subscribed. Give us a 5-star rating if you haven't already given us a 5-star rating. It helps our algorithms and gets us closer to the top so people could see us. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at VTran214. That's VYTRAN214. You can find me on my blogs at thesandwichslayer.com or 7crossroads.com. Elite.
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at AAOLOMI, on my website, aliolomi.com. Or you can catch me on our sister podcast, satellite podcast, Head On History, which has completed its second season, so you can learn a little bit about the history of Islam. Diz.
You can find me everywhere at Dizbullah, DIZBULLAH.
For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in, and remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you. Please don't clone us.